Hi, I'm Eve.
And I'm Eva.
And you're listening to What's in Your Cup.
This is a platform to invite others into our coffee, margaritas, iced dirty chai without milk dates.
To discuss important, beautiful, and difficult things, all within the context of our friendship.
So pull up a chair.
And join us for today's episode.
Hey everybody, it's What's in Your Cup with Eve and Eva. I'm Eva.
And I'm Eve. What's in your cup?
Today, my cup is full with black coffee with some remnants of heavy whipping cream.
Oh.
And a little bit of Truvia, but it's mostly black coffee.
Okay. Interesting.
How about you? What's in your cup?
My cup's empty, but I wish that I were drinking. I know I'm going to do this though because it's so good. I got a London Fog with oat milk yesterday.
Oh.
Oh, freaking heck, it was so good. Eva, I feel like I talk about oat milk every episode, but it's like a dessert,
part of our brand.
Yeah. Anyways, it was so good. I was like nervous. I was like asking him, I was like, dude, how do you think it's gonna do? And he's like, I don't know, I've never tried it, but like let me know so I can let other customers know. I was like, you bet. It was so good. First of all, a London Fog is just the most underrated drink ever. It's so good.
Okay, tell me about a London Fog.
You don't know what it is?
No, because, when I was in Kansas City last weekend, I saw a purse and it said London Fog on it. So when I was Googling it, I also saw that it was a drink. And then I thought, wow, what if I bought this purse and I had a London Fog? That would be amazing. But I didn't buy the purse because it couldn't fit in my carry-on.
That's a big mood all around.
But maybe I could still have the London Fog, you know?
Okay, so London Fog is an Earl Grey steeped in milk. And then they add a little bit of vanilla to it. I love a London Fog. It's all so right. good.
I'll have to try one.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. Anyways, with oat milk, it's pricey, but it's worth it.
What are we talking about today, Eve?
Right relationships. Woo-hoo.
Woo-hoo. So, I know that you are very particular about your verbiage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me why this isn't called boundaries in relationships.
Yeah, this isn't called boundaries because I think that boundaries have a negative connotation and a very threatening connotation to it of like, if you cross this line, this is going to happen. And like, these if-then statements are helpful in life, but it feels necessary, like unnecessarily threatening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And like, very like reward and punishment based. Whereas I prefer the term guardrails because as adults, mature, right headed, you know, level headed adults,
are we?
Anything? We're trying, and that's the point.
We're striving, striving and striding.
I think guardrails is a term I prefer because we're able to look and say, these are my goals. This is what I want my relationships to look like. Based on that, these are the places I could see where I could start, like, you know, falling astray or drifting off or whatever. And a guardrail, these guardrails that we set for ourselves act almost as like kiddie bumpers at a bowling lane of like you brush up against them, right? And you're like, oh, hey, you're like, this is your goal and you're starting to drift from it. You know what I mean? And it feels less threatening and it feels less like I've crossed a line. Now some crazy bad thing must happen to me or happen to this relationship.
Right.
I think it's more encouraging. I always prefer like encouragements over commandments. Unless it comes from the Lord, then like do whatever you want because you're the Lord.
I prefer both from the Lord, encouragements and commandments.
But the Lord does it better than I'll ever do it because like the Lord, you know what I mean? Like just like perfect at everything.
Right.
Whatever. Anyways,
so tell me about a time where you implemented these guardrails in a friendship.
Oh, huge. Yeah. So this spring was like particularly difficult for me. I was really sick. I was taking 22 credit hours. I also was just going through some things like emotionally, old trauma was coming up, whatever, just a hard time. And so I started leaning on my friends as like anyone would do. Not wrong.
Right.
But what was happening is I had this one friend who was also going through a lot of the same things and working through a lot of the same things as far as like trauma and just like emotional stuff. And so it was really cool to have somebody to like lean on and who I knew like understood, and not in this way of like empathy, but like actually like she knows it because she's living it. But what ended up happening was that we would like spiral together and both end up in a really bad place. And it just like was unhealthy for both of us, but neither one of us would tell the other person that. So we had to sit down and have a really, it was a hard conversation. And there was this recognition somewhere in the conversation that if one of us was like, I'm not willing to change, that like the friendship could have ended right there. But basically what we did is we sat down and we're like, hey, I noticed this pattern. It's not good. This is what I want for our friendship. And this is how we can both like hold one another to it. So what did that look like practically speaking? It looked like us saying, hey, when I'm not doing well and you come to me and aren't doing well and need someone to talk to, actually, like, I'm not very good at calling you out of your spiral. I actually just start spiraling with you. And I said, wow, I do the same thing. And we're like, what do we want for this friendship? And we both came to like, we want our friendship to be always directed at the Lord and not at each other. We wanted our friendship to be encouraging, and like a place where we are lifted up, not pulled down. And we wanted our friendship to be fun again. We didn't want it to be this thing of like every time we meet, we have to talk about heavy things and one of us has to end up like crumbling, and then, you know, it doesn't have to be this huge drama every time. And so he said, great, how are you going to do that? And what it came to was a lot of honesty and like going to the person saying, hey, I'm not good right now. Are you in a place where I can talk to you? And then the other person having the courage to say, hey, actually, like, I'm not doing well right now either. Who's somebody else that you could talk to? And then like a mutual understanding, which is spoken very often, of like, I want to be in a place where I can be that person for you. And it's not personal, right? Because it hurts me just as much to have to say I'm not okay as it hurts you to hear like, hey, go find someone else. You know what I mean? But like an understanding that it's always done in love with a capital L, of like willing the good of the other and knowing that like this wouldn't be good for either.
Yeah, I think it's very beautiful, and I think it's very selfless to sacrifice for the capital L, right? I remember you telling me that story and I was inspired and kind of took it in my own way with Adolfo, which we don't necessarily spiral, but I am the kind of person who will come home from work and I will say, let me tell you everything that happened today in excruciating detail and with lots of arm movements and in inflection in my voice, sometimes screaming. And Adolfo sometimes isn't in the mood, sometimes is hungry, sometimes he's tired. And I found that it's better for our relationship if I come home and I say, hey, how are you? And can I talk to you about what's on my mind right now? Like, not in an are you capable, but sometimes in a are you in a place where I can tell you about this so that I can get the feedback that I need from you.
Yeah.
And he is so good at being honest and saying, no, I am really hungry. I can't give you what you need until I've eaten.
Good for him.
Or I really need a nap. So I can't give you what you need until I've napped, which has saved us a lot of hurt, because sometimes I would come in and I'd be like, hey, blah, 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 blah. And he'd just sit there and I'd be like, you're not giving me what I want. And then I would be upset. But, you know, like sometimes you come back and you're like, I really need advice. And he's like, I have no idea what. And I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Give it to me. But yeah, so that has been. That has been very fruitful in our relationship to be able to just be like, where are you right now?
Yeah, man, communication. Who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew that putting the other before yourself might be good for a relationship?
That's amazing.
Who could have possibly imagined?
So I've spoken a little bit about like my boyfriend, right? So how do you think that this right relationships and guardrails and boundaries plays into like you and your male friends?
Yeah. I mean, I want to preface this with my friends know that I love them. Yeah. And my friends also know that I have very strong opinions mm-hmm. about most things in life. And I just like actually am like unwilling to compromise on them because I've not seen it gone well mm-hmm. other ways. So that being said, I don't want this to feel like a judgmental thing or like a condemning thing, but a like very strong conviction thing. Mm-hmm. When it comes to my male relationships, I also want to say that my best friend in high school was a guy and love that kid. But I think that part of the reason we've been able to have a good relationship is because we're clear, you know what I mean? On right. guardrails, what is and isn't acceptable, in our friendship. Anyways, I guess I'll just mm-hmm. like spit out some hot takes on
I'm here for
yeah,
it.
This. I don't think that outside of dating relationships, men and women should be spending time exclusively together. I don't think there should ever be one guy, one girl together that isn't open to a third person, either gender, coming into the mix. Mm-hmm. I think that it's called a date if it's exclusive. And if you're dating, yeah. there's another intention there. And the intention of going on a date is to discern marriage together. And if right. that's not what you're doing, then there's no reason a friendship should be closed off to a third person coming mm-hmm. in, right? You're like, well, what if you're having like
a study day?
A study date. Great. You're not the only two people in that class. Or what if you're talking about right. something personal? And actually, that's where I get into the thing of like men and women shouldn't mm-hmm. be having those conversations.
If they're not dating or discerning. Right. A right. relationship.
This is outside of relationships. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Of romantic
relationships. Right. Thank you. Yeah. We're talking about like friendships here. Yeah. I don't think mm-hmm. that actually like a guy should be confiding in a girl about, you know, his parents might be getting a divorce or he's just been really struggling with depression mm-hmm. and anxiety lately. I don't think that's right because what that does here is like creates a level of vulnerability and attachment set in a positive way, but that's like actually really confusing for both hearts. Right. Yeah. I think that's when the girl has to be responsible enough to say, hey, like, do you have a brother you could talk to about this? Like, maybe another guy could like speak well into this in a way of like, thank you for sharing this with me. Mm-hmm. Like, know of my prayers, but also like, I don't know how well I can speak into this.
Mm-hmm. That is such a hot take, Eve. And I love it because I'm reflecting now in ways that I have been the recipient of that where a male has spoken to me about some personal issues, and whether or not I'm in a relationship with him but if I was single and he were to say this to me, especially if he had a girlfriend, it puts me in a really weird position to think, how would I feel if my boyfriend were speaking that vulnerably mm-hmm. with another woman. Mm-hmm. And then it also kind of, in my mind, gets these gears rolling. If I were single and he was single with, obviously we're vulnerable mm-hmm. together. What does he want something more? Mm-hmm. Or,
you know what I think
so
about
I
often?
Definitely go for it.
Sorry, did I just cut you off?
No.
I think often, because like these situations can be sticky and be like, oh, just like, it's a fine line and it's blurry and mm-hmm. it's a gray zone. I think about this guy is going to get married one day, probably. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Would I be yeah. proud to sit down with his wife on their wedding day, her in her beautiful white gown, family and friends mm-hmm. all around, and say, this one time your husband and I had this conversation, or your husband and I did this together? And if the answer is no, then I'm not. And I personally would not be comfortable sitting down with a bride on her wedding day and saying, mm-hmm. your husband cried in my shoulder one night because he was so upset and I just held him. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think I would be more proud of myself to say, I, received your husband's words in this way and I directed him back to his best man, that guy over there. You see them tearing up the dance floor? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got through it together. You know what I mean? That's what would make me, yeah.
I think that's so interesting because I see where you're coming from. And I find it so hard to turn people away. Mm. And I find it so hard to not let somebody cry on my shoulder. Mm-hmm. You know? Because I can see that. And I've heard that same scenario, but in being too physical, mm-hmm. right? How would you feel if somebody came up to you and said, this is what I did with your husband? Don't love it.
Don't love it at all.
As far as like just emotionally, yeah. that's a whole new level that I haven't even considered yeah. yet. And I,
well, and I think too, when it gets into the emotional thing of like your husband confided in me and I sat with him for 3 hours and comforted him, whatever. I think it's a lot about mm-hmm. not letting it get to that point. Right. And it's about how you conduct yourself up to that point that makes them think that it would be appropriate to confide in you. And I guess it gets really deeply yeah. into like brotherhood and sisterhood of like mm-hmm. what that looks like and how we live that out well from the very beginning. And I think it's way more helpful when everybody understands it from the get-go, right? When like both parties.
And I think that goes back to what we were talking about with boundaries and guardrails. Mm-hmm. And I think it's knowing yourself, like you and your friend had to know yourself and acknowledge that you were spiraling when you spoke to the other person and acknowledge what your triggers were in a mm-hmm. sense and to not deny that. And so I think there's so much freedom with the guardrails when you know yourself to say, this is what I expect. So with a man, it's never going to get that far because you have made it abundantly clear. I know that I should not be texting another man after 8 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
Because it gets dark outside. Too. It gets right. And I know that I will never probably never spend alone time with another man while I am in a relationship
right.
with somebody. Right. Because there's no, and I mean, I did that with my coworker, but there were obvious boundaries. We were driving to work.
Oh, that's different.
And
yeah.
he has a wife and, you know, so there's unspoken boundaries already. Yeah. Right. And I just want to speak really quickly into mm-hmm. when you know that somebody is in a relationship mm-hmm. or when you know that somebody is married, that automatically, for some reason, with men and women, makes it easier to be friends with them. Mm. And I found that with my relationship. As soon as I was in a relationship with Adolfo, it became so much easier to just be friends with men because it let any questionable motives, any questionable mm. intentions, like, oh, does he like me? That doesn't even matter mm. because I'm not letting it go there. And so it freed me up, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I hear what you're saying. I also have questions about like friendship with other men in relationships. Cause then, well, in my brain, when you enter into a relationship, in this case with a man, cause we're women, you almost like place an exclusiveness on that relationship. You say like, this mm-hmm. is the man that I will be friends with. And so then in my brain, like, I think in a relationship, I wouldn't be hanging out aside from like driving with a coworker to work. You know what I mean?
Right.
With another guy, unless my husband or my boyfriend were around.
I think that I mean interacting with. It okay. made it easier to interact with men.
Oh, for
without
sure.
Without this question of, you know, and so
yeah,
in
I mean,
that,
like at school,
that,
at work, you know who's in a relationship and who's not. And you like, right. yeah, can like have a chat at the coffee station without there being like mm-hmm. confusing things or like feeling Ooh. This need to like flirt or like. What did I do that
yeah
wrong? Okay yeah I guess exactly. the word friendship was throwing me off here because I'm like no you don't yeah. have friendships with other men who your significant other isn't also friends with. It's weird.
Yeah,
it like puts a question mark in my brain.
Yeah, and I think that's really hard, and I remember kind of rejecting that idea mm-hmm. And going back and forth about it earlier, but because I was like, I don't want to just be friends with my husband. But then I started, now that I'm in this relationship where Adolfo is my best friend yeah. and I can share everything with yeah. him, then what, I mean, I don't reject other male friendships that I had previously. I still, you know, can carry on or ask him, a man, how he's doing or what's going on.
Yeah.
But I say there's less need for intimacy. you know, and vulnerability. But also, you're saying there shouldn't have been intimacy or vulnerability in the first place, right, when he should have had a man to talk to.
Yeah, exactly. No, I am saying interesting. That. Yeah, but I think, like, now too, like, you do have these friends.
No, I love it.
Well, even, like, if I were to enter a relationship tomorrow, my best friend from high school, I wouldn't just, like, cut him off. But what I would do is invite my significant other into that friendship. So my high school friend and I would not be hanging out, except we went to the fair. You know what I mean? Spent like a whole, it was, it was so fun. Eva, he like came to my house, then we walked to the train station. We were at the train downtown, went to the fair. It was everything. Rode the train back. Love that. It was a great day, let me tell you. Right?
And you found a great hat.
Oh my gosh, that hat was everything. You can go look at my personal Twitter for that hat. I was thriving. But what makes that, and now I feel like people are gonna be like, Eve, that's exclusive one-on-one time. False. Fake news. Because, right, I'm not in a relationship. He's not in a relationship. So I think it's fine that we were hanging out like that. If I had invited another person to go along, or if he had invited another person to go along, it would not have changed the dynamic at all. Yep. We would have had the same conversations, made the same stupid jokes, you know what I mean? Still bickered with each other at the train station in the exact same way, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of openness that I'm talking about and exclusivity that I'm talking about. Eva, there are conversations that you and I have that we would not have if another person were around. And that's okay, right? That's part of sisterhood. That's part of, like, woman-to-woman relationship. And even if we were to invite another woman into it, I think that it would change the dynamic of some of our conversations because of the level of vulnerability. When we do that same thing with a man is when hearts start getting confused and, you know, questions and overthinking and just, like, a lack of clarity exists. And that's really what I'm talking about. And I think that, yeah, like, the practical ways that I avoid that is I don't text men after 10 p.m. There is nothing a man needs from me at this point in my life that can't wait till my phone goes off at 6 a.m. You know, like, absolutely, I will get back to you in the morning. If it was that important to you, you could have texted me at 9:45 and I would have responded. You know, like,
yes, that's just, I love that.
Yeah. And I love that you love it. There are other people that don't love it. And I think that part of, like, being mature and being firm in your convictions is the willingness to lose friends over it, which I have. And that's fine because, again, like, it goes back to the guardrails thing. So I know my goals, I know, you know, where my guardrails are. And I know that compromising and crossing and, like, brushing up against the guardrails doesn't get me to my ultimate goal in life.
Right. Doesn't bring you any satisfaction or happiness.
Yeah.
I love that. I think that's so admirable, Eve, because I definitely am a more, like, wishy-washy, like we talked in the previous episode about me just jumping out of windows, you know. So I think that it's very beneficial for me to have a friend like you who knows, who has strong convictions, and who knows yourself and who inspires me to know myself more and to implement these strong convictions as well, right? Where I'm like, hold on, we have the same goal, and you implement it in a way that is so admirable that I need to mimic that, you know, because it's worked out for you. And my brushing up against the guardrails and sometimes, you know, overstepping those boundaries has never brought me happiness.
Yeah, it's a learning thing. And I think too, like, I'm not perfect. And not to say that I never.
We know that. Just kidding. I'm kidding.
You're not. No, I think, like, this isn't to say that, like, I do it perfectly and I always stay in the lane and always get a strike in life. You know what I mean? Like, I think, like, even with our podcasts, we were, like, riding that guardrail hard. Like, that thing is scuffed up. Yeah. Do you want to speak into that? I feel like I've been talking a lot this episode. I feel like I've just been, like,
no, you're good,
throwing shade at everyone. I want you to talk now.
I love it. So, we recorded an episode zero that will never be released.
Never, ever.
And after that was recorded and we had listened to it, actually, we never even listened to it. We just recorded it and then remembered how it was and then said, no, you said, no, I never want this to be released ever. And I was sort of like kind of trying to push you into reconsidering, push you into just listening to it before we trashed it because it took an hour of our time. It was
a long episode.
So exhausting. Yeah. And I was like, I don't want all of that to go to waste. And so you said, Eva, let me remind you, when we began this podcast, we agreed, here are our guardrails, friendship, always comes mm-hmm. first. Communication and honesty about ourselves and about the podcast and about our friendship always mm-hmm. comes first. And so you then told me why you wanted it to be deleted mm-hmm. and called me higher and saying, prioritize the friendship. And I was like, okay. And so no brainer. I think after you told me why you personally did not want the episode released mm-hmm. rather than just, oh, I didn't, because you're a little bit of a perfectionist, just right? And little, I'm not. Yeah. I'm like, I'm so not. And both to a fault, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought it was only for like perfectionist needs mm-hmm. that you wanted it tossed. So when you said, no, this affects me personally, I said, no brainer.
No brainer.
Delete it. Delete it.
Yeah.
So
that's a huge example.
We will probably reference that episode, and we probably have referenced it previously. But it will never see the light.
Or
the, it'll never touch the eardrums of listeners or however you want to say it. But in that, it was an opportunity to remind ourselves of the guardrails. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been easier since then to communicate for and sure. say, you know what? I didn't love that episode. Like, we recorded this one once before and said, hate it, deleted it immediately. Yeah. And so I just think that it's brought a new perspective into our friendship.
Yeah.
But also our friendship is always before the podcast. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I've seen in you since that of like a clear understanding to, I think in both of us, but like, I mean, I think we practice this in a less extreme way every single time we hit record. Because mm-hmm. right before we say, okay, just real quick, anything you absolutely do not want to talk about. And we name it.
Yeah.
And you say, anything you really want to hit on? And we name it. You know? And that's just like, that's right. a fun one. It's just like good to be aware of like things the other person, you know, wants to talk about and like create that space. But I think that question right before, which you've been really good at asking, is anything you do not want to talk about. And that's mm-hmm. a way of like reaffirming and restating our guardrails for the podcast every single time we go. And I think that that kind of communication has been super fruitful and has allowed us to record in a more productive and more healthy way.
It has given us so much freedom.
So much freedom. Yeah. It's like, can I tell this story and then we'll be done? Yeah. It's like freedom. Okay. You said freedom. And then I got so excited. I hope people are still listening at this point. Okay. So in college, I had this professor who had like 5 kids because theology professors. I think they have like 6 now. Look, no. How many people are on a basketball court at one time on each team? Is it 7?
I have no idea.
However many that is, because I remember the point is that when he made this last announcement, he's like, we have a basketball team. And I was like, so cute. I love that.
That's adorable.
And they announced it with basketballs in a box. And then each of the kids got a basketball and there was an extra one. And then the kids like figured out that it was for them. It was so sweet. This is so beside the point. anyways, my professor with kids. He was explaining that one day they were outside playing and he said, all right, guys, you can't go past the tree to the left, the bush to the right, and don't go onto the street in front of us. Like, go play. Have fun.
Yeah.
And so his kids ran off and were playing. And then one of them came back a few minutes later, all upset. And he was like, what's wrong? And the child goes, I just wish we had a fence so that I knew where the lines were. And it's like,
so I didn't have to think about where I can't cross. Yeah.
And so like, I could just like play and freedom, right? The kid did not use these mm-hmm. words, play and freedom. But that's what she's getting at, right? Of like, it takes a lot of thought when boundaries, guardrails, whatever, are not clearly mm-hmm. stated. And it like distracts you from just like the freedom and the joy and the fun that is a friendship that is playing outside as a kid. But actually when you have a fence, when you have very clear guardrails and boundaries, you just get to run free. And he was explaining this to us in the sense of heresies, right? The heresies are literally the fence of Catholicism. And within the fence, theologians are allowed to run free and play and imagine and be creative as a creator is creative. Right? And we run up to the fence, call the heresy, and we're like, oh, go the other way. You know what I mean? And when you say, wait, why did they put that fence here? And that's where you have like the doctors of the church and whatever to be like, this is why. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I get it. Right?
That's amazing.
Yeah, just like creating the freedom to to play.
So lesson learned, don't be a heretic. Have boundaries and guardrails in your right relationships.
Amen. Catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to What's in Your Cup.
Bye.
Bye.